floor is eerily silent, all except a distant moan. I rub my arms. Those body shots are going to have to be the most delicious mouthfuls of tequila in the world. Des places a hand on my back and leans over to kiss my temple. That's the closest he comes to apologizing for the rotten trick he's played on me. He leads me down the hall, and the place seems all but abandoned. Business is really booming, I say. Des's mouth quirks, but the rest of his face is stoic. We stop in front of a door. Behind it, the moaning is louder. Whoever is foreseeing futures here, it sounds like they're busy ruining someone else's life. Maybe we should just come back later. Without any warning, the bargainer blasts the door open. Knock, knock. Inside the room, a naked woman shrieks from where she lays sprawled on the desk, the man on top of her scrambling to disentangle himself.
Oh, shit,
the man says, catching sight of Des. He rapidly tries to shove his junk back into his slacks. Just, ew. The mostly naked woman screams again, trying pretty unsuccessfully to cover herself up. I guess that explains the moans.
I thought you said we had an appointment, I hiss at Des.
My mate doesn't look at me, instead shaking his head at the man.
You know better than to mix business with pleasure, Colin.
Guess that's the seer. Color me unimpressed. The bargainer waves his hand idly, and the clothes the woman is trying to put on fit themselves to her body. She yelps, then scrambles from the room.
Damn it,
the man says, watching the woman leave before turning his attention to Des.
You could have called.
He has a point. After all, forewarned is forearmed.
My clients always say that,
Des says.
Problem is, when I call, they have a bad habit of disappearing, and I have a bad habit of finding them and adding interest to their bill. Really, this is better for all parties involved.
Colin grabs his discarded shirt and slips it back on.
What do you want?
He asks, disgruntled. He buttons up his shirt and leans back against the desk. Going to need a Bible and some holy water to clean the deeds off that piece of furniture. I feel the breath of Des's magic leave him. A moment later, it slides the seer's shirt sleeve up, revealing two jagged tally marks. I step forward, instantly curious. It's rare to see one of Des's clients with more than one of his tattoos. Probably means that Des trusts Colin.
Remind me again how many months you've had these?
The bargainer asks. The man pulls his sleeve back down, fidgeting with the cuff. I get a glimpse then of how young he really is. Mid-twenties, maybe? And now that I'm looking for it, there are indications that he's uncomfortable in the clothes he wears. After what we walked in on, I wasn't expecting that from this guy.
I'm willing to pay off my debt,
Colin says.
Just tell me what you want.
Now I hear Colin's rough-around-the-edges accent. A scenario takes shape. A kid with promise but not a lot of options approaches the bargainer. The bargainer sees something of himself in the young man, so he helps him a little more than his other clients, and thus the young seer has an inspiring rags-to-riches tale and only two debts to show for it. Colin's eyes move to me, and there they catch.
Who's this?
He asks with a tad more interest than is professional.
It doesn't matter who she is. What matters is what you can do for her,
Des says. The seer's face turns cocky. He gestures for me to come forward.
Wash your goddamn hands first,
Des growls.
You're not touching her after having your fingers in some broad's pussy.
Colin raises his eyebrow but gets up.
I see our time apart hasn't made you any nicer.
Des's eyes flick briefly around the room.
I see our time apart has made you richer.
The seer grunts. Giving me a little nod, he leaves the room. I turn to the bargainer.
Why are we doing this? Really don't want to be here.
Cherub, I personally promise that if Colin does anything you don't like,
I open my mouth,
other than foreseeing your future.
Damn it, I close my mouth.
I will personally gut him from navel to throat.
Jesus.
Well, I'll collect my last favor from him, Then I'll gut him navel to throat.
Des amends. No one needs to gut anyone else. The door opens and the rest of my words die away as Colin returns.
All right, the seer says. Where were we?
His eyes fall to me, brightening with interest.
Oh, right, you want a reading.
I don't want a reading, I say, just because I figure that point needs clarifying. Colin turns to Des.
Give her a reading.
Ugh. The seer clears his throat.
Okay. Please take a seat, Mom.
He gestures to a nearby couch.
I'm sure I look like a petulant child as I take a seat. I mean, I get it, just because my stepfather was Satan.
That's not literal. I've heard Satan is actually a lot nicer than Hugh Anders. Doesn't mean all seers suck. But it also doesn't mean I have to be a good sport about this.
Colin sits down next to me, and Des moves to the wall across from the couch, leaning against it and folding his arms, his biceps stretching the sleeves of his AC/DC shirt. Seriously unfair that the bargainer can look that tasty even when I'm annoyed at him.
I'm Colin,
the seer says, drawing my attention back to him. Figure you ought to know my name before I go peering into your future.
I'm about to clap back that I already know his name, and this sucks, and everything sucks, but I force out a smile.
Callie.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, whatever. The seer takes my hands, his thumbs stroking my skin in a way that's not entirely professional, but maybe that's just me. I stare down at our hands, and as I look at them, I begin to sense his heartbeat pounding beneath his skin, moving magic with blood. His human power fills my senses. His ability is strong, staggeringly so. My eyes flick up to Colin. I think I'm waiting for incense, incantations, at the very least an open flame or a shallow bowl of water to divine my future from. My stepfather had a bowl he used to carry around that was meant for scrying. He never used it on me. He never dared to face his monstrous deeds head on, but he liked using it with clients. This seer doesn't do any of that. He breathes in deeply, his gaze fixed on mine, his eyes searching, searching. They unfocus. My own gaze goes to Des, who settled himself in a nearby chair. With one booted foot, he's tilted the seat so it rests on its two back legs. When he catches me staring, the edge of his mouth curls up. He begins to levitate himself and the chair, entertaining me like he used to when I was a teenager. I begin to snicker.
Eyes on me,
the seer says gently. My attention returns to Colin. The two of us stare at one another for a long time, long enough to make me shift in my seat and for this to feel awkward, long enough for me to vividly visualize those body shots. It takes another minute, and then Colin begins to speak.
I see another entity shadowing you, slipping into your consciousness when it has a chance. What can do that?
The seer murmurs to himself.
This is no incubus. This is no earthly being. It will continue to haunt you. It wants to... I'm not sure. It wants you, Enchantress.
That name. I tense. Jess's chair lands harshly. Now Colin closes his eyes. Seconds pass and his breathing seems to slow. This feels like it's going off script. The seer's eyes snap open. I rear back. I know the creature staring behind those eyes. This is no seer. Not anymore. He begins to speak.
Hurry, Enchantress, you're running out of time.
I try to pull my hands free, but Colin's grip tightens.
I'll devour you slowly. Your life is mine.
The corner of Colin's mouth curls up into a sinister smile.
So flee from me, for once I'm through, I'll be freeing myself and coming for you.
The seer drops my hands, coughing and rubbing his throat. When he glances up again, the thief is no longer in his eyes.
What the fuck was that?
He rasps. I'm shivering, and not just from apprehension.
The room's grown cold and dark. Dez steps out from the shadows.
That was a creature in need of extermination,
he says, helping me off the couch.
What else did you foresee?
He asks, staring at Colin. The seer clears his throat, still rubbing at it.
I saw darkness and death, and something about it was
aware.
Whatever that shit was, it's closing in on her,
he says, nodding to me.
If no one stops that thing, then it will get a hold of her. And in that case,
Colin looks at me apologetically.
Death is not what you should worry about.
Death is not what you should worry about. That should be the thief's slogan. I've already seen that when it comes to this monster. There are other brutally twisted things he can do that circumnavigate death. And now my mind conjures up all sorts of impossible things that are worse than death. See, this is what I mean about wanting to have a normal life. Normal people don't have to worry about things worse than simply dying. Colin rolls his shirt sleeve up just as one of the two black lines disappears from his skin.
That was all you really wanted?
He asks.
Would you like me to take more?
The darkness still hasn't lifted.
No, no,
the seer rushes to say.
Then I'll be around,
Dez says.
And professional tip, try to keep your dick in your pants during the workday. It's bad for business.
Desmond puts a hand on my back.
Ready to go, cherub?
He says, his voice gentling for me. I nod. More than ready. Colin reaches a hand out, presumably to shake Dez's. The bargainer looks down at it with mild distaste. Instead of taking the seer's hand, a black business card manifests between Dez's fingers.
You know how this works. We're not fucking chums. Give my card to a friend in a tight place, or don't, but don't forget where we stand. You still have a favor left.
I guess that's as close as the bargainer ever gets to his nicer clients. Colin takes the card from Dez, and that should be the end of things. It's not. Maybe Colin is cocksure or curious, or maybe he just wants to make a point. But at the last minute, he grasps Dez's hand anyway, forcing the bargainer into a hostage handshake. The moment Colin's skin comes in contact with my mate's, the seer sucks in a breath, his eyes unfocusing. Methinks someone else is getting their fortune read. Next to me, Dez's form flickers. One second, Colin has him in a handshake, and in the next, Dez grabs the seer by the throat. He slams Colin back against the wall.
I'm sorry, but I don't remember asking you to fucking read my future,
the bargainer says calmly. There's nothing to give away his simmering anger. No shadows, no outline of wings, nothing. Colin pries at Dez's fingers uselessly, but the more their skin comes into contact, the worse off the seer appears to be. Colin's eyes roll back, his breath choking. His body spasms once, twice. I step forward. Dez, what are you doing? I ask, alarmed. He frowns at the seer.
Nothing.
As if to prove his point, the bargainer releases the man. Colin crumples to the ground, his body weak and shaking. He moans, his eyelids fluttering. He coughs.
Bargainer.
The Night King stares impassively at him.
You pull that stunt again, you'll lose those fingers one by one.
Dez glances over at me.
Ready, cherub?
Yep. Dez places a hand on my back and leads me to the door.
Wait!
Colin calls out from behind us. The bargainer doesn't slow.
There's something you should know,
the seer says, his voice hoarse.
The darkness. The darkness will betray you.
Chapter 24. We don't speak until we're a block away from the building.
How would you like a beer?
The bargainer finally says. Dez. It's barely a whisper.
I need a beer.
Dez. I stop. I feel like I can't catch my breath. You can't just pretend the last 10 minutes didn't happen. The bargainer mutters something under his breath. He turns to me,
his hair looking like snow against the gray London backdrop.
Callie, nothing is going to happen to me.
He sounds so sure of himself, like he's impervious to harm. I want to shake him. That seer said the darkness would betray you, Dez.
The seer is a little prick who got too big for his britches.
Why is he not listening?
He looked into your future. Callie.
He takes my hand, rolling my engagement ring a little. Always have to be wearing a piece of the bargainer's jewelry.
It's all right. I'm not discounting Colin's words. What will come to pass, but you need to trust in me. Can you do that?
No. Ugh, yes. It feels like I just got you back. I glance down at my feet before looking at the bargainer again. I can't lose you twice.
Who said anything about losing me?
Dez asks.
Don't let your mind play tricks on you now, love. Betrayal is not the same as death.
I take a deep breath. He's right. Begrudgingly, I nod.
You good?
Dez asks.
Nope. Not really.
I want those body shots.
Desmond found us a themed club after all. One that offers body shots. Alchemy, a nightclub in London, is decked out to look like a sorcerer's paradise. Every last decoration tied into black magic and spellcasting.
Cherub, this is a bad idea.
Des gazes up at me from where he lays, fake flickering candles encircling him. He looks like a sacrificial offering among it all, and I guess that's the point.
You love bad ideas, I say. I hold a little vial of salt in one hand and a lime in the other. So fucking excited.
Normally, this one I'm not so sure of.
Under his breath, he says,
would have been more fun if our roles were reversed.
I lean in close, my mouth inches from his. I'll make sure you enjoy yourself. I punctuate the statement by running the lime wedge around the bargainer's navel. His eyes brighten, and through our bond, I sense the barest hint of his excitement. He is such a liar. He's thrilled about the situation just as much as I am. My attention moves from his face to his torso. I follow the lime wedge with a circle of salt. Honestly, this is so sexy it should be illegal.
Des flashes me a wolfish smile.
Enjoying yourself, cherub?
Just a little. I place the lime wedge in his mouth and flag down the waiter. A man dressed in sorcerer's robes comes over with a handle of tequila. At my signal, he pours the amber liquid into Dez's navel. Once he's done, I lean in. I smile at Dez as I lick the salt off his abdomen. A groan slips from between his teeth. Pressing my lips to his navel, I swallow down the tequila. Beneath my mouth, the bargainer's muscles flex. I place a hand against them as I rise, the alcohol burning down my throat. I lean in again, pressing my lips against the bargainer's, then take the lime wedge between my teeth, the citrus cutting through the bite of the alcohol. Once I set the lime aside, Dez sits up and swivels to face me, kicking off an array of candles in the process. He places his hand on a slab between his legs.
Have you had your fill, love?
That's a trick question, right? I lean in. Not even close. Dez keeps his shirt off for the rest of the night, and the entire female population of this place can't handle it. Seriously, they can't. It's a problem. Everyone is looking at you, I say. Dez sits on the bar, drinking straight from a bottle of fancy whiskey. He's really not supposed to be doing either, but when I told him that, he simply said,
rules are meant to be broken.
Then he winked, took a sip of his whiskey, and I spontaneously orgasmed. Okay, the last one didn't happen, but it was a near thing. I sit on the bar stool like a normal, grown-ass woman, while my fairy king all but pins me in with his legs. Not that I'm complaining about it. At all. I mean, I'm right at eye level with his abs. There are worse views. Dez lowers his bottle of whiskey.
Everyone is looking at you, Cherub.
He shakes his head.
The years may pass, but at the end of the day, you're still that high school girl who's woefully unaware of her own beauty.
A woman steps up to the bar next to us, her arm innocuously brushing Dez's thigh.
Sorry, she says,
apologizing even though half the people in this place are touching the other half. I give the bargainer a pointed look.
See?
He ignores the woman, instead leaning forward.
Your wings are starting to show, baby siren.
I'm keenly aware of that. Alcohol plus fey possessiveness plus all my lusty thoughts are making it nearly impossible to hide them. The woman leans into Dez, and this time when her arm brushes his thigh, it's no accident.
Do you come here often?
She asks Dez, ignoring me completely. My skin brightens, and I look at the woman.
Scoot.
Without another word, the woman pushes away from the bar, moving back into the crowd. So that was technically against the law, but God, it felt good.
Is someone jealous?
Dez flashes a devilish smile, taking another swig from his bottle.
Psh, no.
Yes. I glance at my skin and frown as it dims.
This is a supernatural bar, right?
Not exclusively.
Using the hand that holds the bottle of whiskey, Dez crooks a finger at me. I don't move so much as his magic presses me up against him.
Which means that, much as I love these...
He touches a wing.
Oh, crap, they're out again.
We're going to have to put them away.
Beneath his palm, I feel Dez's magic pour into me, just as it did the last time he hid my wings back at my house. There's a momentary pressure as the magic forces them to disappear, and then they're gone. We stay at the nightclub for another hour, moving from the bar to the dance floor to an area where we can just stand and mingle. The entire time the patrons of this place watch me and Dez, and there's so much in their looks. Lust, envy, avarice. The bargainer does nothing but seed it. I can taste his magic in the air, reckless and wild, beckoning people to make bad decisions. Eventually, they do. They drink more, touch more, and creep ever closer to us. Soon, fights are breaking out, at least two couples appear to be participating in some heavy petting, and Dez and I have scared off a dozen people interested in poaching on this relationship. Do you do this at every party you attend? I ask.
Do what?
He asks, appearing innocent. Rile people up. He smiles.
Are you not having a good time?
I literally almost clawed a woman apart 5 minutes ago. She'd inserted herself between me and Dez and then proceeded to flirt with my mate, at least until he conveniently sidestepped her to rejoin me.
Shame I stopped that so soon.
Ugh, this is what happens when your soulmate is a fairy. True shows of devotion often involve spilling blood.
But you're forgetting all the men and women who've approached you,
he adds. Men and women who then took one look at the menacing bargainer and rethought their game plans. Dez sets the beer he now holds on a nearby table.
Why don't we call it a night?
The body shots have been drunk, the good times have been had, and everyone else here is now a sloppier mess than either of us. It's as good a time as any to get going. The two of us leave the club, heading down a couple blocks until we get to a local cemetery. Once there, Dez leads me through a ley line entrance, the air wavering as we step through. It takes less than a minute to travel from London back to California, and when we step off the ley line, we're back in Dez's house. The bargainer whisks me out of the circular portal room, the door clicking shut at my back, lock after intricate lock engaging. I glance at Dez, who leans against the door for a moment. He's got the devil in his eyes when he looks at me.
What?
I say. My blood is beginning to rush through my veins.
You didn't think I'd let you take those body shots without repayment now, did you?
Dez says. In a blink, he's in front of me. Shamefully, his shirt is back on. It brushes against mine as he steps into my space, backing me against a nearby wall.
How do you want it? On the floor, against the wall, or over the counter.
Christ, my skin begins to glow as my siren awakens, drawn by sex and magic. His hand dips into my pants and cups my sex.
Or would you rather I choose for you?
I gasp, my hands coming to his upper arms, my fingers digging in. It takes little effort for him to slide my panties aside and dip a finger into my core.
I'm taking that as choose for me.
Dez, he's feral and overwhelming and silver-tongued and so very, very fey. A second finger dips in. I moan at the sensation. My fingernails sharpen as I clutch him, my claws pricking his skin. My nails dig deeper, and the king of the night grins when they pierce his flesh. We really are a twisted pair, getting off on blood and sex. My breath is coming in pants, my legs parting wider as I urge him on. His nose and lips brush my flushed cheeks.
Or perhaps I'll choose none of that. How I do love seeing you fall apart at my touch. Perhaps my touch is all you'll get.
He nips at my chin, toying with me, clearly enjoying that I'm clay in his hands right now, ready to be molded into whatever shape he wants. A minute ago, I wasn't thinking of sex. Now I'm lamenting the slow torture of him burning me up without properly filling me. I begin to reach for his pants when he catches my wrist and pins it to the wall.
That's not how this works.
Des kisses my neck, then moves his attention to my mouth, tasting like liquor and dark deeds. All the while, his deft fingers stroke me up and down. He takes my lower lip between his teeth, rolling it around, his clever eyes particularly devious. He releases my lip.
Come against my hand,
Des demands. It's the same pushy order he used to give me back when I had a bracelet of beads. And even though the bracelet is long gone, I feel the bargainer's magic bloom between my legs, strange and forbidden. My knees go weak as my orgasm is pulled from me, sweeping through my system. The pleasure is violent and sudden. It seems to stretch on, and even once the waves of it abate, the comedown seems to last a lifetime. I lean my head against the wall, breathless and flushed. You are such a bastard, I murmur.
Aw, you don't really mean that, cherub,
Des says, removing his fingers from my panties. He places the two of them in his mouth, licking them clean. Have I mentioned how dirty he is? It only takes a minute or so for me to regroup from getting fingered within an inch of my life. My siren is riding high. Far from being satiated, she's only just gotten a taste of sex. Pushing off the wall, I prowl over to the bargainer. Taking his jaw gruffly, I kiss his mouth. For a guy that specializes in favors, your repayment plans lately could use some work, I say, tapping the side of his jaw with a clawed forefinger. I'm sure I look just as devious as he does. Releasing his jaw, I kneel down in front of him.
Callie.
I begin to unbutton his pants, glancing up at him. Dez's eyes are crackling with desire. Dez wants to tell me to stop, but he also wants my lips around his cock, and he wants that very badly. The zipper makes a hissing noise as I pull it down. Lucky for you, when it comes to repayment, I'm willing to help. Chapter 25. The world forms from chaos, blurs of color sharpening until they become things. The first thing I notice is the tickle of wheat against my open palm. Then it's the vivid blue sky bearing down on me. Then it's the thief. He walks through the fields dressed in black, looking like a reaper come to collect my soul. Like the last dream, seeing him this way is disarming. If you take the monster living under your bed and put it in broad daylight, what then? He comes up to me, uncomfortably close. This is where I cringe away from him, where I revolt.
You went to bed with one man and woke with another. How very confusing,
he says. I'm not awake. It's on the tip of my tongue, but then I hesitate. I get the uncanny feeling that this is what I'm supposed to say, that the thief has our entire interaction choreographed, and it's all part of our little game. Only I no longer want to play. I'm done revolting, done being scared, done acting according to some preordained script. Rather than responding, I squint at our surroundings. From horizon to horizon, it's endless golden fields rippling under a painfully blue sky. The sifting sounds of wind sing through the wheat. How do you choose where we meet? I ask. His hair stirs as he answers.
Whatever pleases me in the moment. That's what I choose.
As my eyes take in that sharp blue sky, clouds begin to roll on the horizon. They move unnaturally swift, gathering on each other. The thief of souls can build dreamscapes and wear the faces of the dead. Two staggering powers. The clouds darken like bruises until they've shadowed the land. The sky splits open above us and the heavens unleash. Lightning flashes and thunder booms. Rain pelts down on me and the wind lashes against my body, whipping my hair about. I feel like I'm at the center of some terrible vortex, and the magnitude of it all is dizzyingly beautiful.
Does it frighten you?
The thief asks. He watches me carefully, the wind and rain tearing at him. No. I turn to him, my wet hair slapping at my skin. Do you want it to? An enigmatic smile crosses his face, and his eyes flash alongside the lightning. Just as swiftly as the storm moves in, it retreats. The rain stops, the sky clears, and the sun peeks out again.
I think you have better things to fear from me.
He begins to circle me.
Things worse than death.
I remember Carnon's prison, the women shackled in iron, raped by the thief, slowly losing themselves to his dark magic. I think of the soldier I interviewed. It's dark here, very dark. I want to rest. Why can't I rest? He comes back to my front.
I will never leave you alone, Enchantress. Never. Banish the hope if you have it. You cannot ever escape my clutches, not even in death.
I search his dark eyes. What have I done? Is it being a siren? Is it as simple and as shallow as pretty skin molded over pretty bones? Or is it something more specific to me? Something that went wrong long ago? There's a part of me, a long dormant part of me, that's awakening. It should have been pulled free back in high school, when my powers blossomed, or when Carnon altered me, or even when Dez fed me the lilac wine. But it wasn't. It didn't happen then, but I can feel it now, some long-buried strength upwelling from deep within me. The thief tilts his head.
What have you done?
He echoes.
You have enlivened me. You make me feel the blood rushing through my veins.
He steps in close.
You have aroused me. Dirty human, beautiful woman, unlikely enchantress. You have caught my attention, and I will enjoy you, for a time.
I'm not going to escape him. This is the one simple truth I'd been denying for so long, and now I face it. I'm really not going to escape him. One day soon, I will have to face the thief, not in a dream, but in waking life. A reckoning is coming for us, and by the end of it, one of us will be the victor, and one, the vanquished.
I will break you again and again until there is nothing left to break,
the thief says softly, running his knuckles over my cheek.
Break me?
I've been thinking about this wrong all my life. I'm not porcelain to be shattered. I'm something else entirely. Break me? I level my pitiless gaze on him.
You can try.
The next morning when I wake, I'm alone in Dez's bed. For a moment I simply lay there, gathering my pillow up and breathing in the bargainer's scent. Eventually I sit up, running my hands through my hair. On the bedside table, a cup of coffee sits. The note beside it says, "Till darkness dies." A little smile slips out. I take the mug and sip, letting my mind drift. Inevitably, my thoughts move to last night's dream. For the first time since I started having them, I'm not frightened by the nightmare. The Thief of Souls and I are pitted against one another, not as hunter and hunted, but as adversaries. And that detail changes everything. Since Carnon's death, I've been in the business of running, so much so that I haven't truly done any chasing. Setting my coffee aside, I slip out of bed and rifle through Dez's things until I find a notebook and a pen. Clambering back into bed, I uncap the pen and press it to the page. The Thief of Souls controls dreams, small death, wears the bodies of the dead, wields dark magic, places fairies into a stupefied state, fathers children who drink blood and prophesies. Most of the attributes have something to do with death, and those that don't seem to be attributes of night fairies. Not that this knowledge brings me any closer to answers. Stupid mystery. I could just glamour the thief and force the confessions out of him. Holy shit. I could do that. Why have I not thought of this sooner? I'm elated for 2.5 seconds before I remember that I freaking already tried this hat trick after I drank the lilac wine when he came to me in a dream. It didn't do a damn thing but excite the freak. So much for that idea. Unless dreams have their own sort of logic to them, maybe he's only impervious to my glamour in dreams. I rub my forehead. I mean, who the fuck knows at this point? I'm running in circles here, and all I'm managing to do is to confuse myself. Setting my notes aside, I push myself out of Dez's bed. I steal an Iron Maiden shirt from his drawer, ignoring the folded set of women's clothing clearly meant for me, grab my mug, then pad down the hall. I find the King of the Night in his living room, blessedly shirtless as he paces back and forth. He stares down at an unrolled piece of parchment, his brow furrowed and his lower lip pinched between his fingers. His eyes move from his work to me. A grin spreads across his face when he catches sight of my t-shirt.
"That is a very good look on you, Callie."
I hold up the mug. "Thanks for the coffee."
"Anytime, love."
"What are you reading?" I ask, coming over to him. His gaze drops to the paper and his frown returns.
"Reports on the state of the Otherworld."
For a moment, the information is a shock. I'd almost managed to forget that even on Earth, Dez has a host of responsibilities he still must attend to. See, this is proof I'd make a shitty queen. "What are they saying?" I ask.
"Malachi tracked Galagar to the Fauna Kingdom, but lost him there. And as far as the kingdoms themselves go, flora and fauna are suffering massive casualties. The wholesale slaughter in those kingdoms continues. The thief soldiers are moving to all the big cities and killing any fae they come across. The sleeping soldiers are sustaining heavy losses themselves. Flora and fauna fae aren't just going down without a fight. But the carnage continues."
This entire time, fairies have been dying. While I was taking body shots off of Dez, those soldiers were cutting through innocence. My stomach rolls at the thought. "You let yourself be idle," my siren whispers. "This is what happens." "Why would the thief do that? Conquering is a blood sport, but these kingdoms have already fallen. There's no reason the deaths should continue."
"Why would he indeed?"
Dez looks up from the paper, meeting my eyes.
"You have a box of memorabilia from some of the worst humans. What would they do if they came into power?"
"They'd kill and maim and run their kingdoms lawlessly, and no one would be safe but for them." "This isn't a human we're dealing with," I object. "Humans have their own drives, fae another."
"Evil doesn't work that differently between worlds,"
Dez says,
"although fae do have a knack for creativity and flair." Des sets the parchment aside.
Oh, by the way, I thought you should know. Typhus Henbane is dead.
It takes me a minute to place the name. The king of the banished lands. The one who'd we come to for news of Galagar. The man with a city's worth of stolen magic is now dead, and I'm at least partially responsible for it. Yesterday, that piece of information would have sat like a stone in my stomach. Today I'm in an odd mood. What happened? I asked.
Exactly what you feared might happen. His people rose up against him and slaughtered him. They took back their magic.
The magic he'd forced them to barter away. Bartered magic. My eyes snapped to Des.
What?
I run back to his bedroom, only to find the bargainer is already there waiting for me. He stands, arms folded, watching me with curious eyes. Sidestepping him, I grab the paper I left on the bed and stare at my notes. Can I have my timeline? I beckon to Des with my hand. Wordlessly, the bargainer produces the timeline I'd created days ago, dropping it in my hand. I set the two papers side by side on the mattress. Over my shoulder, the bargainer stares down at them. It was right in front of me the entire time. Galagar and the thief share powers. Chapter 26. Galagar and the thief share powers. I don't know how or when or why the two of them are linked up, but I would stake serious money the two are co-bound. That would explain why Galagar keeps popping up during our search for the thief. He's hooked on the same magical power line that the Thief of Souls is. So long as their magic is bound together, you can't have one without the other. The proof of their strange partnership is mapped out on the timeline. Centuries ago, Galagar is killed. Only his body is incorruptible, defying the natural order. For 200 years, he lay dormant, much like the sleeping soldiers, until he was awoken by a shadow similar to the one that haunted the sleeping women and the casket children. When I turn to face Des, he looks horrified. The expression is only there for a moment before he tucks it away. His gaze moves to mine.
Gods.
He takes a step closer.
That would explain why my power wouldn't destroy the sleeping soldiers.
Because the shadows are loyal to their own. Even if the thief isn't a Night Fae, his life and magic is co-bound to a man who is one. The darkness will betray you. I grab my notes and read over the list of the thief's traits. His powers obviously have something to do with necromancy, but necromancers are mortal and the thief is not. Des, can you think of any fae that can do what the thief can? It's an old question, one the two of us have run around a dozen times already, so I'm not surprised when Des shakes his head. Whatever the shadows tell Des, they won't tell him this. There are some secrets not even they will give up. Unfortunately, those are the secrets worth knowing. The day passes idly enough. Des and I have a proper breakfast, then lounge and bask in each other, and the hours flit by. By midday, I'm swimming in the ocean beneath Des's house. I even manage to drag the King of Night into those chilly waves. And far from shore, I show him that sirens don't just like killing men in the water. We enjoy fucking them, too. At some point, we head back over to my house. Des fixes the busted faucet in my spare bathroom, and I give him a very personal thank you. We cook, we chat, we enjoy each other. It's simple and lovely and quintessential, and yet, neither Des nor I get to have this life. Not while the thief and Galagar are terrorizing the world, and no amount of bargaining can change that. At some point, our little vacation here on Earth will end, and we'll have to go back to the other world and deal with all the problems we left behind. I spin my engagement ring round and round my finger, and then, abruptly, I stop spinning it as a thought comes to me. There is one thing I'd like to do before our time here is up. My gaze moves to Des's. Take me to Venice. It's been 8 years since I've been to this place. 8 shockingly long years.
And yet, walking next to the canals, you'd think it was only yesterday that I convinced Dez to take me on one of his bargains. Even now, my heart skips a beat remembering that first time I watched him work. His world was supposed to frighten me, but it had the opposite effect. I got a taste for his secrets, his favors, his magic. That was the first night I peered into his world. So it feels only right to come back here now. Next to me, Dez studies my face. I still haven't told him my reasons for coming here.
"Secrets, Cherub, are my thing, not yours," he says.
But his eyes are bright, like he very much enjoys whatever little trick I have up my sleeve. It's a good trick, too. "Give me an hour alone." Dez raises his eyebrows.
"What mischief are you going to get into without my company?"
"Aw, is someone feeling excluded? Too bad. The kind you're not privy to." Dez narrows his eyes. "Go find something to do for an hour," I say. "I know how to reach you."
"Hmm,"
he says, assessing me. His eyes rise, taking in the glittering lights of Venice. It's late here, but the city is still alive with music, voices, laughter. The place is under its own sort of spell.
"I'm supposed to just entertain myself in the meantime? Here?"
"Without you?" He doesn't say this last bit, but I hear it nonetheless, and it warms me to my toes. "I'm sure this is not the first night you found yourself with time to kill." He takes a lock of my hair and twists it around his finger.
"Fine, Callie. I'll find something to do."
He says this like he's going to look for trouble.
"While I wait."
I part my lips to respond when Dez disappears into thin air. The lock of hair he'd been twisting now flutters back down to my shoulder. My heart pounds a little louder. I've got an hour. Best make it count. I know what I want the moment my eyes land on it. I'm even surer once I run my fingers over it. Right now, I hold the great secret I'm trying to keep from Dez, his wedding band. I angle the ring back and forth under the light of the jewelry shop. Tiny pieces of crushed mother-of-pearl catch the light. Their iridescent color isn't as flashy as I'm used to. It looks closer to moonstone than anything else, but it isn't the moon I want Dez to be reminded of. It's the sea. My mate gave me a piece of his night sky. I'm giving him a piece of my ocean. The siren practically purrs at the thought. I run my finger over the band again, my heart beating fast. I never thought I was the sentimental type, but here we are. "I'll take this one," I tell the jeweler. I buy the wedding band and leave the shop. I haven't even taken 10 steps when I stop and pull the ring out of the small velvet case it's nestled in. I roll it between my fingers as I stare down at it. There's one last thing I want. I've rarely tried to tap into Dez's magic, but then I've had no reason to. Now I do. I close my eyes and tug on the connection I share with the bargainer. Down our bond, I feel the pulse of his magic. I draw on it until I feel it slip through my veins. With a little push, I send it down my fingers and into the ring itself. When I open my eyes, I catch sight of the engraved words Dez's magic bought me. They twist around the inside of the ring. "Until darkness dies, be mine always." A combination of his vow to me and mine to him. God, I'm really owning this whole business of being sappy. Before I can study my work in any more detail, a familiar presence is looming in front of me. I glance up at the bargainer, startled to see him. "You weren't supposed to come until I called," I protest. The question falls on deaf ears. The bargainer's eyes latch onto the wedding band, and he's looking at it like he's Gollum and I'm holding the one ring to rule them all. Aw, fuck. This wasn't supposed to happen quite this way.
"You drew on my magic," Dez says absently. "I was worried. What is that?"
My heart hammers at his question. I bite my lip, but it doesn't stop the words from spilling out. "It's your ring." I take a deep breath. "Marry me, Dez. Tonight, Right now. He stares at the ring for several more seconds. Slowly, his moonlit eyes rise to mine, the silvery threads of them luminescent. His hand closes around the ring, his other hand wrapping around my wrist like a manacle, as though I and my offer might slip through his fingers if he doesn't hold on tightly enough. He looks very fey. Very, very fey. His features seem to have sharpened, and the look on his face is rapacious.
Are you serious, Callie?
The words are careful and clipped, like he's holding back a great deal of hope. I nod, not daring to speak. The last of my courage slipped out with my words. His hold on my wrist tightens, and then his wings manifest. Chapter 27. I can't get over the sight of him in all his glory, right in the middle of Venice, no less. He looks at me like he's dying, like this is agony, but then he smiles, and the sight is staggering. His free hand threads its way into my hair, and then he's pulling me forward, and his mouth is suddenly hard against mine. He kisses me like a man possessed, his lips laying claim to mine. I can taste his magic on his tongue, like the night itself has a flavor. Even after the kiss ends, the bargainer keeps me close, his hand clasped behind my neck, his forehead pressed to mine.
I would love nothing more, Callie, than to marry the shit out of you.
He tilts my head so he can whisper into my ear.
You cannot know.
I feel him shake his head against me as words fail him. He holds me close, his talon-tipped wings curving protectively around us. I reach out and touch one leathery wing, tracing a vein. Bargainer, I would like to make a deal. Dez stiffens.
Callie.
He doesn't need to say anything more for me to understand what he's thinking about. The last time I bargained with our relationship, we lost 7 years together. It's a little request, I say. One that should have no lasting repercussions. The king of the night waits, but there's no mistaking how tense his body is. I want to get married somewhere special to you. Dez touches my face lightly, his expression unreadable. I think maybe he's wildly elated, but maybe that's just hope talking. Wrapping a hand around my waist, the Night King lifts us into the air, his wings billowing about him.
Cherub, it's a deal.
The place Dez chooses to marry me is not Earth, but then I didn't think it would be. We stand amongst the ruins of the Temple of Lyra, some ancient fey goddess associated with new life. The carved marble archways and columns are now mere bones of what once must have been an extravagant building. Time eats away at all things. Not even the fey are impervious to that fate. The wild grass has overtaken some of the fallen slabs of stone, its stalks swaying in the evening wind, the blooms of 1,000 pearlescent flowers bobbing to and fro amongst it all. Lyra's undying flowers, Dez told me when we first set foot in this place. Temper and Malachi arrive shortly after us. I've got to hand it to the two of them. They clean up well, considering we gave them such short notice. Short notice as in, we dropped the news only a few hours ago. Well, 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 Temper says when she sees me, the train of her misty blue dress dragging along behind her. There's my best friend. Did you have fun boning Batboy while the rest of us were actually saving the other world? I press my lips together to keep from smiling. I wasn't just boning Dez, I say. We partied a little, too. Without me? Don't act like you were being held here against your will. I found her in Malachi's room, wrapped up in his sheets. Bitch, you don't know what it's been like here. She side-eyes Malachi, who's busy thumping Dez on the shoulder. Temper lowers her voice. He's really freaking intense, which is awesome when he's drilling me, but not so much when it leaves the bedroom. I get the impression that the dude wants commitment. Yeah, I'd gotten that impression, too.
Too bad Temper's allergic to it. She waves the conversation off and pulls me in for a hug. I seriously never expected this day to come, she says, holding me close. You're giving me faith that even we bad bitches can find love. I laugh in her arms. My friend pulls away to take in my pale, glowing gown. The fabric is made from spun moonlight, the embroidery of it shining just a little bit brighter than the rest of it. At my throat is the necklace Dez fashioned for me from moonbeams. I feel like a fairy queen. You look beautiful, Temper says. There's no sarcasm, no joke, no usual barb to curb the sweetness of her words. All right, Temper, you can stop being sentimental. It's freaking me out. Malachi comes over then, pulling me in for a hug.
Desmond is a blessed man to be mated to a woman like you. Thank you for making him happy.
Dez's general and I have never talked much, and to be honest, I always assumed he felt I was just some girl. So to hear him say that? I don't have the words to tell him how that makes me feel, so I simply hug Malachi tighter. He releases me and steps back, placing a heavy hand on the back of Temper's neck, his fingers idly rubbing her skin. She's not batting him away, which she'd have no problem doing if she didn't like the guy. A mystery for another day. Dez steps up to me, clad in the same glowing silks as I am, his bronze circlet on his head. He's almost unbearable to look at. His inhuman beauty is almost painful to look at.
Callie,
he says,
there's something I wanted to show you.
Dez takes my hand and leads me away from Temper and Malachi, then away from the ruins themselves. Cool night air whistles through the flowers, and it's all so very serene. The bargainer brings me to a small mound covered with flowers. He kneels in front of it, placing his hands on the earth.
This might be a bit macabre, but I've wanted to bring you here for a long time,
he says.
This is where I laid my mom to rest.
I start at that. His mom? The one woman who'd sacrificed everything for him in the end was buried here? And Dez laid her to rest? I try to imagine that. Dez carrying his slain mother to this place, digging a grave for her? Had he been alone? The possibility itself is heartbreaking. Why here? I ask. It's beautiful, but so are countless other places in the other world.
She used to tell me stories of Lyra, the goddess of new life.
Dez nods his head to the ruins. His eyes return to the grave.
Sometimes I come here to be close to her,
he admits. He glances up at me.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make this about the past.
It's not. I take his hand and pull him to his feet. The bargainer has few important people in his life. Even in death, his mother is one of them. The first woman to care for him. It's only appropriate to be here, where she can pass that torch on to me. I give his hand a squeeze. Let's go get married. I begin to tug him back to Temper and Malachi when he resists.
Wait, Callie, there's one more thing.
I turn just as Dez reaches for the heavens. Far above us, the stars shine away, but as I watch, molten drops of starlight spin down from above, coalescing in Dez's palm. He whispers something in Old Fae. In response, the starlight jumps in his hand, moving around until it forms itself a delicate, twinkling circlet. Dez grasps it in both hands and places it on my head.
There.
He steps back, the starlight reflecting in his eyes, and stares at me the same way he did all those years ago when he made me a crown of fireflies.
In all the worlds and all the ages, there has never been another like you, Callie.
He clears his throat, like he's remembering himself.
Now let's get married.
Dez and I stand before Temper, our hands clasped. The sorceress's usual attitude is gone. Here, with Dez and me before her, she's solemn. Among the oddities of the evening is that she's our officiant. Malachi stands off to the side, the witness to Temper's officiating.
Dez runs his thumb over the skin of my hand as he gazes into my eyes. I'm not sure he's ever been more handsome in his suit of spun moonlight. Standing across from him in my own glowing gown, the wind carrying my filmy train off into the night, I finally feel like this life fits. My mate was right. I'm not normal. This is not normal. People don't have claws and scales and wings and otherworldly stalkers. But normal people also don't get to feel their soulmate's magic move in them. They don't get to be part of a fairy tale. They don't get the love that transcends time and worlds. I squeeze Dez's hands. Normal people don't get this, but I do. Temper reads our wedding vows, and the Night King and I recite them again to each other, with a few additions of our own. From flame to ashes, dawn to dusk, for the rest of our lives, be mine always, Desmond Flynn, I say. My wings have come out, exposed by my raw emotion. The Night King brings my knuckles to my lips.
I'm yours, Calypso.
His own wings are folded at his back. They've been visible ever since Temper first started reading the rites. Dez lowers my hands. His eyes search mine. I can feel his magic gathering in the air, the darkness pressing in on us.
And mountains may rise and fall, and the sun might wither away, and the sea claim the land and swallow the sky. But you will always be mine. And the stars might fall from the heavens, and night might cloak the earth. But until darkness dies, I will always be yours.
And so we get married before the ruins of Lyra, Dez's mom watching us from where she lies amongst the undying flowers, the stars our only other witness. Before we leave the ancient temple, Malachi, Temper, Dez, and I share a bottle of fey wine from Lephis, where the fruit itself is grown from the island's glowing waters. It tastes like hope and love and the sweetest memories. This might be the first time the four of us have ever sat together outside of a professional setting, and I find that Malachi has a dirty sense of humor and that he and Dez act more like brothers than best friends.
Thank the gods you finally made an honest man of Desmond,
Malachi says, leaning forward to clink my glass. Honest? I raise my eyebrows. Are we talking about the same man? Malachi laughs, and his teeth are blindingly white against his olive skin.
Aye, that's a fair point. Letting you two be friends might be my worst decision yet,
Dez says, gesturing between me and his general. Now you know how I feel. The only thing worse than Temper or Dez on their own is getting the two of them together. I still can't believe you two fuckers did body shots without me, Temper grumbles.
What's a body shot?
Malachi looks genuinely confused. Oh, you sweet thing. Temper pats his cheek. I'll show you later. After the wines run out, Temper and Malachi return to Somnia. Dez and I linger amongst Lyra's fallen temple a little longer, the evening breeze rustling the wild grass and making the flowers sway. There amongst the ruins, the bargainer makes love to me, each stroke of his hips a promise. The two of us share a bond, a single life, and decades of unwritten future. Eventually we leave the ruins, trading in Lyra's undying flowers for silken sheets and the comforts of Dez's palace. It's only in Dez's chambers, my body draped over his, that the silence swarms in. I lift my head from his chest. The king of the night is already asleep, his breathing deep and even. I stare at his devastating features in the dim lamplight. Something thick lodges in my throat. Husband. It's just one more title to tuck away, one more claim I have on him. I trace one of his pointed ears. I'm unspeakably happy. And yet I still don't get to have this life.